Welcome back, guys. It's the Outer Rim News podcast for the week of May the 27th, which is, I know it's been a little while since we've been here, but we're back. Life finds a way, I guess. So I'm here. I'm your host, Austin. I've got, of course, Ray, the ever-loving Ray, with us. And, yeah, man. Ray, how's it been? How's your month been?
It's fresh. Feeling fresh.
Ooh, I like that. Fresh. how you been, man? Man, I've been fresh. It's been fresh.
Funky fresh.
That is awesome. That is. I'm just here in Summertime right now. Yep. By Fresh Prince.
Yep.
And DJ Jazzy Jeff. Can't leave him out.
No, you can't.
But no, man. I just want to, let's just go ahead and get it out the way right off the bat. We have us a special treat this week because we have basically something that everybody's been screaming at us about. So, yeah, it's the return of the Ash.
What?
Mr. Ashley Wilbanks.
What? How's it going, everyone? I am back.
Oh, listen to that baby voice.
Yes, I am
listen
back.
Listen to that voice.
I'm back to talk some Solo. Some Solo with Star Wars story.
Well, I'm glad you are, man. I'm glad you are. I assume everybody has seen the movie by now. If not, I don't know why we even run a podcast.
Yeah, I've seen it twice. I've seen it twice.
Yeah, me too.
I've not seen it twice. I've only seen it the one time so far.
So you wanted to record this. Why, Ray?
Really?
I don't know.
I'm joking. Man, it's crazy. So, I mean, I wasn't expecting to see it twice already, but yeah, it was just like fate had it where I was able to just, I went and watched it by myself the first time. And then the second time I took my fiance and we just watched that today.
What?
So yeah.
How did that work out? How did you manage to skip out with her on the first showing?
Well, the first time she was recovering cause she had foot surgery.
Oh, okay.
And she's like, well, you know, I know how much you love, you know, Star Wars. Like, I know you want to be there open at night. So I won't be mad. Like, you can go ahead and go, and then you can take me, you know, in a few days. So I was like, all right, bye-bye.
Hope your foot's okay.
Before
bye.
You change your mind, bye. But no, that's pretty much it. That's the story. I mean, that's pretty much why our podcast has kind of been on hiatus for a few weeks. It's just been a busy couple of weeks. I've been out of the state, and I've been traveling, and then, you know, foot surgery with the missus, and so, you know, now she's on the mend, so we're good there. And so yeah, we're back, kind of hopefully back to a more stable schedule.
That's good, because you know what, I'm not paying you guys to sit there and miss weeks of podcasting.
Hey, those peanuts are good, so just keep sending them to us.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I'll keep doing
that. I, for one, love Five Guys peanuts, so free stuff. Thank you.
All right, let's get all that crap out of the way, man. Let's go ahead and talk some Solo. I'm dying to talk Solo.
Yeah, you sound like you're pretty excited. So let's kind just, of, I guess we can go around the round robin and let's give the opinions.
Yeah, first impression.
Go ahead, Ray. I mean, go ahead, Ashley. Go ahead. You're bubbling to just
okay,
do it.
Okay. So without getting into too many details, because I know we're going to talk about this throughout the podcast, but I thought it was, and this could be, bear in mind, this could be just that first time seeing it kind of vibe where, you know, it hadn't really sunk in yet how good or bad the movie is, but I thought it was a really good movie, better than any of the Disney movies so far.
Yes.
There. I said it. Boom. Psh. And I don't understand the low box office revenue from this movie so far. You know, it hadn't even crossed 100 million yet. And I'm just like, why is this not doing better? This is like a great movie. Took me a while to get over Harrison Ford not being Han Solo. I mean, it takes a good 15, 20 minutes to say, okay, this is not Harrison Ford. But after that, I mean, the movie flows and you're into it and the dude's Han Solo.
I have a feeling that this is kind of one of those cases similar to like Justice League, where when you hear so much troubled stuff about the production behind the scenes, it turns a lot of people off from it. And, mm-hmm. I think, you know, the same thing happened with kind of, you know, remember what happened with Justice League, you know, Zack Snyder had to leave, you know, yeah, with his daughter's death, and then Joss Whedon took over. And, you know, all of a sudden a lot of people started saying, you know, well, you're changing directors and the movie's not done yet. And, you know, that automatically, you know, puts up a lot of red flags for people. Now, I think that's probably what happened here too, is, you know, the Lord and Miller left and then you got Ron Howard coming in. So I bet a lot of people were kind of a little hesitant, wondering, you know, well, is this even going to be worth it then if it's, you know, two people, you know, two different styles going at it?
Yeah, that's valid. That's valid. Still didn't explain less than $100 million to me.
Well, it's crossed over $100 million. It's, I think right now it's up to 140.
Are you sure?
So yeah, it's like all in all, I think so far it's opened up to, let me see what the exact number was. It looks like at this point it's 148.3 million.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah, so it's okay. So it's doing okay. It's, I mean, it's, you know, for I think for the franchise it's a little weak, but overall just movie wise, I mean, it's a pretty okay opening.
Okay.
The
stuff I was looking at was saying like 83 million on opening weekend.
Yeah, that's another thing too I've noticed, is that it feels like there's way more scare tactics out there for this installment. So like all the reviews are kind of like, you know, when it was premiering, like when they premiered it at, didn't it film at Con?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They show it at Con, and then they, you know, and then the red carpet event, and people were saying like, oh, it's great. I mean, it's actually like, oh, it's actually pretty good. Cause you know, everybody was holding their breath thinking like this could be a disaster. So, you know, their early reviews were kind of just like, oh, it's really good. Like, it's a really fun Star Wars movie. Like, it's really like fun was the big word, is that I loved it. It was funny, but it was just a fun movie. And, so I, you know, I kind of had that's all I wanted to know. I just wanted to hear the early reaction, but you know, I didn't get any specifics and got positive vibes, so I felt better. And so, yeah, for me, I mean, I kind of agree with you. I don't know if it's tough. I don't know if it's the best of the Disney movies so far, as far as I can think. Mm-hmm. It'll have to sit for a while and stew and let me really put it up against the others.
Yeah.
But it is a strong contender, because I feel like at this point, I feel like Rogue One may have been a stronger standalone.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought Solo, to me, Solo was just a very, like, again, I thought it was a very fun movie. And I love the fact that it definitely was a step away from the usual Star Wars film. I love the fact that you didn't have lightsabers all over the place, and it was, you barely even saw the Empire. It was mainly kind of like, you know, like scoundrels and bounty hunters and just, you know, pirates and mercenaries, all these kind of people all kind of fighting amongst each other. So you're getting this level of a story. You're not having to worry about the big picture, you know, like the Death Stars and all that. So it felt like a real good. So to me, it was like, even with Ron Howard's direction, I thought the movie really flowed and felt like a Willow meets an Indiana Jones movie. You know, it was just a fun sci-fi flick that had some cowboy adventure.
Yeah.
That's pretty much my take on it. What about you, Ray?
I'm kind of with Ashley about it. Like, it's definitely my favorite, I think, of the Disney movies.
Okay.
It kind of reminds me of, I wouldn't say it's too similar, but like, it kind of reminds me of like, one of my favorite authors is Elmore Leonard, and his Western books, it kind of reminds me of, like, it's got his vibe where it's got a lot of snark to it, and it's got kind of a simplistic Western story to it. You know,
because if
you think about it, like, if you kind of, like, break down the bare bones of the story, you have kind of, like, almost a classic Western tale. And I love it. I mean, and my favorite shot in the whole movie is that shot on the beach where the Marauders come up, and he, you know, they do the gun belt shot, you know, where it's... love that, and you know, even snaps the holster loose.
Even the shot, the earlier shot with him is like the profile shot, you know, where you see his holster and he's looking at the Sabacc game where Lando's playing. Thought that was really iconic too.
And also one other thing I really loved about this movie, that they really have, like, I feel like they've dropped the ball on all, like, especially with like the main series movies, and I feel like they really got back onto it with this one, was they weren't afraid of making aliens actual characters in the movies and not just background pieces. You know, Chewbacca had more to do in this movie than he's had since Return of the Jedi, even like more so than that. And then, you know, he had the characters like, what's his name? Rhea? The, you know, they're
John Favreau.
Yeah,
John Favreau's character, yeah. Rhea, I think it was something like that.
Yeah, like you had him, and then you had L3. You got a lot of non-human characters, and they did a great job with them. And, you know, I love that they focused on that, and they weren't afraid to go that route with this one, because, like, that almost kind of annoyed me a little bit with, like, The Last Jedi, as they felt like they spent so much time. I thought, you know, we'd get more Chewbacca or more alien stuff, and, you know, it was more just more human stuff, and we barely got any aliens other than, like, background stuff. But, yeah, this is my favorite so far of the new ones.
Sweet.
Okay, let's do this. Let's talk about, I know, Austin, we were Facebooking back and forth, and you said you had some issues with it. So let's do your biggest issue. Let's go around the table. Your biggest issue, Austin, with Solo.
I mean, I guess with me, I can kind of tell where they're, you know, they were sort of wary, and how you could see how the direction of the movie changes. Mm-hmm. So at times it felt like I can tell it was put together at last minute. Like, it was basically saved. Like, you can tell that Ron Howard kind of came in, saved the day, and was able to kind of flesh out some world building and some characters here and there. Mm-hmm. Like, he did a real good job with the actual characterization of the movie. That was the positive, but the negative was that it felt like at times certain things felt sort of cobbled together, like kind of last ditch kind of way, but he did it in a good way. I wouldn't say it's a true negative. I can just tell that there was probably a lot more ambitious things with the movie that they were thinking about doing, even probably on a comedic level, like me and Ray talked about previously, like on a Thor Ragnarok level, and that could have been part of the problem.
Yeah.
But because the humor broke through, and I love the jokes and stuff, but sometimes even the jokes fell flat.
Yep.
Because it felt like they didn't want to quite be as goofy. Like, I bet Jon Favreau's character was, you know, they probably would have made him a lot more of a comedic character. But I really liked how Ron Howard made him, I guess. Or even if it wasn't even Ron Howard's character, like, maybe it had nothing to do with him taking over. It just kind of felt like that character probably would have been more, just because, like Ray said, they actually use alien characters. I bet he would have still been, like, the alien, the goofball of the group, like, you know, spitting the one-liners all the time when he's on screen. And he kind of does that, but in a way, though, he's real sympathetic. And then, when he dies, spoiler alert, when he gets killed, just that beautiful thing he says to Han, where he's like, you know, she's, you know, Sal's right kid, you know, or is it Val?
Val.
Val. You know, Val's right, you know, I don't want to die alone, you know? Hmm. Or it's not cool dying alone.
Yeah, don't
it's not
die
good
alone,
or something
yeah.
like that. Yeah, so it was just like a beautiful thing for this character to do. And, you know, I'm sure that was his purpose, but at the same time, I don't know, I just felt like certain things, certain setups like that were kind of iffy. But I'm trying to think of any other negative I had with the... I would have liked even more Millennium Falcon.
Oh, yeah.
Like, some more flying around and stuff, but, you know, it was a good climax to the movie. Once I went back and watched it again, I was like, yeah, this is a good time for it to be in here.
Yeah. Well, Ray, what was your biggest issue with the film?
I didn't see Tag and Bink.
That's true.
wasn't Tag and Bink the ones that threw Han into the cell with Chewie?
The funny story is, I actually asked, like, the guy who created those characters, Kevin Rubio, I asked him online, I sent a message out to him on Reddit, and I asked him, like, if he noticed if they had been cut or not, because I said, like, I noticed he said he loved the movie, and I just responded, and I said to him, did you see if they were in there? Because I try to pay attention, you know, I didn't want to lose focus on the movie. Did you happen to see what happened to him? And he said to me that he thinks that they may have been cut for time. But he also kind of said what you were saying. It looked like the ones that put him in the pit with Chewbacca. He said they seemed just like Tag and Bink in terms of, like, how they acted and their personality. He said they had the perfect cadence for those. So he, like, some people are apparently theorizing that what it may have been them, and then they might have had, like, helmets put over them in post production, like, you know, right, digitally put on them, and that might have been them. So, I mean, I didn't notice them. You know, it didn't look like they were officially in there, but, if it, you know, that could have been them.
They just, I felt like those two had the most pep in terms of being, like, a stormtrooper or an officer. And they kind of had that younger, like Bill and Ted type attitude, you know, when they were throwing Han into the pen. So, I just assumed that was them, but they just never came out and said it. Like, you never had anything that obviously stated who the characters were.
Yeah, yeah. See, because the weird thing was, like, the picture Ron Howard took with the, you know, who was it? It was Joe Kasdan and some other guy. I forgot the other guy's name. But, you know, they're the ones playing them. And it looked like they were, like, in officer uniforms in the picture we saw. So that's the one thing that was throwing me off is, like, you know, if that was them, then I wonder where that picture comes from where you see them in those uniforms.
Right.
So I don't know. They were somewhere. But I think that was my main grievance. You know, I kind of let a lot of stuff slide because I was just having so much fun with it. You know, I didn't feel like it was trying to pound any kind of lesson into me other than just, you know, it was being a fun Western that you can enjoy.
Yeah, it was a great fun Western. That was one thing I really enjoyed with it was the fact that it was a great fun Western type flick, but it was just a character piece. You didn't really, like, you know, the other movies sometimes can maybe make a kind of like a political or a, you know, just some sort of a statement, social statement. With this one, it was just nothing like that. It was, you know, a character piece on Han, and you kind of see all the things that happen in his life that kind of make him have to make a choice, you know, and he you know, of who he's going to become. And I just thought that was really cool because you really get to see him, you know, with so many obstacles and so many choices and things like that. So it's, I don't know, I really loved all the little aspects of it, and even down to the way him and Lando's relationship was, you know, it was really playful, but at the same time, it was like they didn't let the other one run over them. You know what I'm saying? He was always just like, you know, you're going to be fair. And I just thought their dynamic worked in the movie really well. Like, both of them did a tremendous job.
I would say, okay. Yeah. Thinking about it, I would say it's not so much a grievance as I thought it was kind of like, huh. The creation of his surname, Solo, I thought that was a little... it wasn't terrible or anything. I just thought it was like, okay. So that's how... I assumed that he had just always had the name, but, you know, it had to be... It seems like maybe surnames, like, at least where he was, like, growing up as an orphan, you know, he just never had one. You know, he just...
Right. I did... I wish... When I heard it, too, I was kind of like, oh, you know, like, I kind of was hoping it would be him that... Even if it was him that presented it, like, he's like, huh, I guess I'm Solo. Han Solo, you know? So it's, you know, something like that, but with the basically an Imperial officer giving him the name Solo, it was kind of weird, but at the same time, I was like, I don't know. It was just I don't know.
A little on the nose, like, because he was alone.
Yeah, I really did love his line though, where he says, "I don't have any people." That was a deep line. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I let a lot of stuff slide with it just because I was enjoying it so much throughout it.
Yeah, the one thing I didn't like about it was some of the jokes did fall flat, and I just kind of, you know, just sniggered to myself, like, you know, I wish that was a little bit funnier. The Solo thing was on the nose, like you were talking about. The one thing I wanted to see more of was maybe how he became such a good pilot. It was just kind of, you know, in background storytelling that they talk about how he, you know, he's a good pilot. Okay, so he drives a car race thing, you know, a book vehicle, because it looks like a freaking book. and he's pretty good at that, but that's not really a ship. You know, the first time we see him fly a ship is the train robbery thing. You know,
right. I guess I feel like maybe the reason why it slipped by me, because I was the same way. I'm like, you know, yeah, I would have liked, that's why I would have liked to see more Falcon, you know, Millennium Falcon stuff. But at the same time, I was like, yeah, I guess it was because I just didn't see enough piloting, but it did give him this, you know, he was, you know, escaping people from speed through speeders, and then he used, like you said, he made the break with the ship, like, got everybody off the train. But the aspect I liked about it was how he was a good pilot, and he was, you know, he always was the cock of the walk, but he could walk the walk and not just talk the talk. And it was you know, at the same time, he's flying by the seat of his pants. So by the time we get to the Falcon, he's this giddy kid that's got all this pent up energy. Like, I want to get in there. Like, I know what I'm doing. I just need the tool. I need you to give me the reins, you know. So when he jumps in there and starts doing it, he does it. Even though there's a lot of little corrections he's having to kind of test himself, you know. He's kind of like, oh, you know, that was almost bad, but it wasn't. It's okay. You know, and that sort of stuff. It was like he was taking a big risk, but at the same time, it was like he had all these skills. He just hadn't been able to fully utilize them, and this was it. This was his big moment. So that's one thing I was able to appreciate with the movie.
Yeah, I guess so. I just wish there was more, you know, maybe even show him as an Imperial pilot. You know,
right? That is another thing. I would have loved to have seen more, like maybe a few shots of him as an Imperial pilot, like, or just that, you know, like in training or
yeah.
something, you know. So you see that he really did have the stuff down. I mean, I guess that battle, the battle worked, but at the same time, I felt like some of that stuff is like one thing I noticed the second time around watching. I'm like, this is a dark movie in terms of the lighting. Like, there's a lot of crap going on in the dark or just in really low lit sets, you know. So like, for example, that battle scene, there was just so much dust and explosions and stuff. It's like I couldn't hardly see anything. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I feel like the common moviegoer isn't going to really catch a lot of the humor in that particular scene with how Han sees the bullet holes and in what's his name's uniform and all that kind of jazz. But, I would have liked to have seen more scenes of him as an Imperial officer.
Yeah.
Well, what was it he mentioned in the story? Like, he mentioned that he washed out of the academy because he couldn't take orders or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
So
yeah.
It seems like, you know, as good as he could have been, you know, he wasn't listening. You know, he wouldn't listen to his commander, I guess, maybe during training. Right. And they just decided, you know, well, screw you if you're not going to listen to what I have to say. I don't care how good you are.
Right.
It would have been funny to see that something like that happen, like just a little moment.
Yeah. And that's sort of the whole theme of the movie, too, is he doesn't listen. He doesn't do all this. And in the very end, he actually does. He just doesn't care. You know, he didn't care about the previous times. He didn't want to listen to Imperial commanders or whatever, but he is actually listening, because in the very end, you see that he, you know, he pays attention and he does listen. But yeah, it would have been nice to see him fly a TIE fighter. That's all I'm gonna say about that.
Yeah, no, I definitely see. I was expecting him to. I was thinking that, you know, if anything, that him and Chewie were gonna have like an escape, you know, from Imperial camp or something, mm-hmm. and he would have to fly one of the new TIE fighters that they introduced in the movie, because it was kind of like a 2-man job. So I was thinking, I'm like, I bet that's probably what they're setting up. But of course, they didn't do that, because they never take my calls or anything. So
yeah.
Whatever.
I know.
I will say I was taking some notes today, like while I was watching, some stuff that kind of interested me about it.
Okay.
There was at the beginning when he's first captured and having to
time out.
Taken before.
Time out. Wait, you took notes for the podcast?
This time, yes.
What the crap, dude?
Fans,
we're supposed to be the Googlers.
I know, man. I know. Hey, I'm still having to Google, but at the same time, it's like,
you got Richard Roper up in here.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I'm getting professional. But no, I was just thinking, like, in the very beginning, it was what was the name of that character? It was the lady that was kind of over
Lady Proxima?
Corellia's
Lady Proxima?
Yeah.
Proxima, that's right. Lady Proxima. During that scene when Han's captured and they're poking the stick in his face, you know, the little shock staff, and when they do it the second time, you know, he really is getting, you know, pissed off about it, and he finally grabs it. Like, you better be holding the stick or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
I felt like that was almost a precursor to, you see how Han does not like to be poked. So, like, in Return of the Jedi, when the Ewoks are trying to poke at him.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, hey, you know, cut it out, you know, that sort of thing. Like, I just feel like it kind of had a connection there. I also noticed that they purposefully were trying to, like, throw in props from other movies to show like the connections between all the movies. Like that's like the lowest form of the canon, is like, we got to have the same props.
Well, what?
So like,
keep going.
Well, I was just saying, I know, like, I think Rose's shock thingy, I think Beckett used that when he was on top of the train and jammed it into that power socket or whatever it was, that port. I feel like it was something like that he used. There were some trooper goggles on that plant, I guess Mimban or whatever. They had those silver, those chrome goggle-looking things. Those look like the same goggle, like the eyepieces on Kylo Ren's mask.
Hmm. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, I was looking at that, and I was like, it looks sort of like it. It looks like maybe he took, like, the eyepiece part, like, that covers the eyes, and maybe utilizes that into, you know, another... Because even their helmets were similar, like the black, but the steel samurai kind of shaped helmet that Kylo Ren wears. But I don't know. I feel like that may have been something. Because I feel like Kylo Ren probably cobbled that helmet together. Let's see, what else did I notice? Oh, did you capture the Bosk mention?
Of course.
Yeah.
Even my wife really did. Cool. Even my wife did.
She was probably like, oh, Ashley, I bet you like that.
Did
huh?
you hear that? It said Bosk.
Well, what about the Aura Sing reference?
Oh, yes.
Ah, that was in my list, too. Yeah, God. Beckett killed Aura Sing. I was like, oh, my God, man.
Yeah, and when we were watching it, too, like, me and my fiance Brittany, like, yeah, she was like, oh, my God. Well, when they made that mention, another thing I really liked about this movie that kind of put it above the other ones was that it really felt like it was connected to the universe outside of the movies.
Yeah, the expanded universe.
Yeah, it felt much more connected because it didn't seem like it was trying to, like, not acknowledge them. Like, it actually, like, it reached out and, like, you know, made mentions of them. I loved that whole part.
Of just winks. Yeah, instead of winks, it was like clearly they were tying it into the external media.
There's another part in there. Do y'all want to wait before we talk about that? You know, the big,
well, I was going to say,
cameo.
You know, you're probably about to bring up, like, probably my most favorite part of the whole movie.
Yeah, do y'all want to talk about that yet, or do y'all want to hold off on that?
I mean, that's fine. The controversial part of the movie.
I loved it. Like, I didn't mind it at all. The funniest thing was, like, after we saw the movie.
Spoiler alert. Yeah. Maybe we ought to explain what we're talking
about.
Yeah,
spoiler alert.
Who wants to make it?
No, go ahead, Ray. Go ahead.
When Maul shows up.
Yes.
And it turns out he's the one behind Crimson Dawn. He's Dryden Voss's boss. What I loved was, after the movie was over, like, you know, you were asking, like, if I caught it. And then I told you that Brittany actually pegged the voice before I could, because I was sitting there watching, and I knew the voice was familiar, and I thought, no, it couldn't be. And then I noticed the mechanical legs, and then when he finally took the face, you know, the hood down, and we saw that it was Maul, yeah, I was blown away by it, because they, you know, not only did they get Ray Park to come back and actually be Maul again, they actually also got Sam Witwer from the, you know, Rebels and Clone Wars to come and do his voice for the movie.
Right, exactly.
I just thought that was a great embrace of the, you know, the outside, you know, the expanded universe. I mean, even his blade was the same one from, Yeah, he had it in Rebels. Did he have it in Clone Wars too?
Oh, in Clone Wars,
you know where he had that like half circle.
I'm just trying to remember if he had that design, because I feel like that was a Rebels thing, but maybe he did finally design that in Clone Wars.
I know he had the dark saber for a while in Clone Wars, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. But yeah, he eventually, I think he built that maybe in the end of his storyline in Clone Wars, maybe his arc. But definitely in Rebels. So I was, yeah, when that happened, I saw like the feet, when I heard the voice and saw the feet at the same time in the chair, I just was like, no, no, no. And then when you see it, like before they even show his face, you see his face, but it's like, you know, it's a silhouette, like it's shrouded. I was like, oh my God. And I fanboyed, I fangirled, I fanpersoned out. I was like a mess. I mean, it was bad. I'm sure people heard me, because I was just like, it was crazy. I could not believe it. And I even stayed afterwards, like made sure I got through the credits to read. I was like, that was Ray Park. That had to be Ray Park. I'm like, I knew it was Sam Witwer doing the voice. That was Ray Park. It better be Ray Park. Was it Ray Park? It better be. So, like, I'm waiting for the credits, and then they say Ray Park, and I was so happy. I was like, I wish I was friends with Ray Park, and I had his number so I could call him and be like, you in the new movie, fam?
No, you have to be angry about it. It's like, you son of a gun. You didn't tell me that you filmed a cameo.
You got me.
How could you keep this secret?
You invited me to the set. I hate your guts. So, Ashley, what did you think?
Well, don't get me wrong. I loved it, too. I loved it, too. But it's controversial in the fact that the average Star Wars fan, do they know Darth Maul's backstory since The Phantom Menace? And does that make them scratch their heads? I thought he was dead.
Well, I feel like it could work either way, because I definitely get it. Like, that was another thing. I'm you know, watching this movie again, I was thinking, like, how's the average moviegoer going to embrace this movie? But, you know, I was sitting there thinking, you know, even Rogue One's the same way. So you kind of just, you know, it's like if they latch on to the story, they latch on, you know. And I think in this case it was easier because of it being that real, you know, that Western action flick kind of thing going for it. I feel like people who aren't aware, you know, they're at least like, oh, well, I guess he's going to be the bad guy in the next movie or something like that. Yeah. You know, they're going to do a sequel. Or people who've at least seen episode one and they know who he is, even if they're like, whoa, he's alive. You know, it's at least kind of like, oh, that's a pretty cool twist that they're finally bringing him back around, you know. Hmm. And so I feel like it works either way. I don't feel like he would have been that confusing. To be honest with you, I feel like the most confusing part of the whole movie was the reveal of Infus Nest's
fact
it was a girl.
I
was like, am I supposed to know this person?
Yeah, that we were thinking about the same thing after the movie was like, because they made such a dramatic moment out of her taking her helmet off and you just see this normal looking girl. And we were just thinking like, okay, am I supposed to know who this person is? It just seemed like it was supposed to be more dramatic that it was just this simple little, you know, this simple, you know, human girl, instead of it being someone who's supposed to be known. That was a strange moment, but I think that was probably the point of it, because, you know, Han even seemed confused by her.
You couldn't tell? That's Rey's mom.
Ooh, oh, God.
Blew it up.
Oh, God, no.
No, Rey's mom is Kira, because Kira's going to dump her off on the planet because she's like, oh, no, she's, you know, I can't have her in my life like that.
No, Rey's mom is the Force, you know, obviously, because she's got to be better than Luke in every way.
Oh God.
Boom.
But what you were saying with Maul earlier, I kind of agree with Austin. I think they give you enough information where if you've just seen episode one, it gives you everything you need to know, because you could see his mechanical legs. So it kind of, you know, just clues you in, you know, when you see that Maul is alive.
Can you? I mean, we know they're mechanical. We know they're mechanical, but
I mean, to
the average person, if you know, do they recognize that as mechanical legs, or because it's a hologram, do they just look at it like, you know, that's Darth Maul?
I would say maybe it's more one of those moments where once you realize it, you'd probably go back and pay attention a little bit, and then you'd notice it. Because if you know what you're looking at with that one, I would say, yeah, you're kind of right. You have to know what you're looking at to know what it is. I wasn't completely, you know, certain that they were mechanical legs when I first saw it. I had to kind of really look at it for a moment before I noticed that they were like, you know, like I said, the cybernetic legs.
Yeah, I mean, I took my dad the second time we went to see it, and he was totally confused. I mean, he remembers who Darth Maul was, but when he saw it, he was like, okay, so you're saying this movie takes place before The Phantom Menace? And I'm like, no, Pop. No. Okay, so let me tell you all about Star Wars canon, okay? They got these things called cartoons. And, you know, I had to go and kind of drive down that path to explain him how this all worked. That's my fear, that after he did that I'm like, okay, how many other people are just totally confused? And that's not going to say that's part of the bad publicity that this movie is getting, but you know, they're like, you know, what are they doing here at Lucasfilm? But no, don't get me wrong. I loved it. I fanboyed out when I saw it too.
One thing I thought was that kind of fell flat for me was L3's character. I felt like L3 was really cool, but like maybe they just needed a different voice, because one thing Candy kept asking me, she's like, is that Gwendolyn Christie? Is that Gwendolyn Christie? And I'm like, no, it's not Captain Phasma. So it kind of gave, but it sounded like Captain Phasma, or it sounded like, what's her name from Doctor Who and Guardians of the Galaxy? What's her name, Ray?
Wait.
The redhead?
Oh, Karen Gillan?
Yeah. Yeah, Karen Gillan. Like, it kind of reminded me of her. And I was thinking, I'm like, maybe they should have gave that robot a different voice. But I guess it was like they wanted to give it a feminine voice for because of how she was real confident. And she, you know, she was like standing up for the, you know, all the droids and things like that, you know. Yeah. So I guess that was just kind of the idea. They wanted it to be a female voice. I don't know. I guess maybe if anything, I guess if you were to make it Queen Latifah, you would people would say, "Oh, well, you're just putting Queen Latifah with Lando," you know, and you know. But
I did kind of like the idea, you know, with or that droid was like, you know, she was kind of like one of the first times we've seen one of these kind of self-aware droids.
That was
you know, it was actively pushing, you know, a droid uprising.
And the thing is though is like I love that and I love how that they tied her character into the overall canon because you know back when 3PO mentions you know that the
Falcon's language
onboard computer for the Millennium Falcon hat what does she say Ashley
what
or what does he say what does C-3PO say
about what
about the ship by the computer on the Falcon
oh like it's strange I can't remember the exact wow you put me on the spot here
I mean I was even thinking myself today I was like what because see we I remember 3PO making mention about how the ship has kind of got its a mind of its own like or, it's
yeah,
kind of fussy or
yeah,
something
fussy
like that.
Or nasty or something like that
yeah something like that and I'm sitting there thinking okay because so L3 had a strong personality but L3 also had one of the most sophisticated star maps you know for navigation, so it's like, and then when they had to incorporate her and you know she had to kind of integrate with the Falcon, I was like, oh, that makes sense now. So I really like that aspect of it, but I did still like Lando. I thought Lando was so like Donald Glover did so good playing Lando, like he was spot on.
Yeah, he did,
and he really made it work with you know the connection between him and his droid. Like he really. Like, and even Candy kind of teared up, you know, it was like, you know, you could feel it. Like, he did care about L3.
Well, you know, pansexual.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
How does that work?
Kind of like the Captain Jack of
it works.
Of Star
it works.
Wars.
Yeah, it works. That yeah, you're right about L3, man. There's a lot of people making a lot of noise about her or it or whatever you want to call the droid. Saying that it was a standout of the movie, but I was like, okay, you know, she wasn't in it much, you know.
Right.
Her screen time probably totaled 7 minutes, maybe, you know. So I was like, okay, there's whoop-dee, this is not making the film for me.
Right. I didn't think she was like the strongest part of it. I guess she felt almost too put on. Like, I've already been through a whole season of Star Trek Discovery where you have a really outgoing like quirky character that worked.
Stop it.
But this one felt just, like this
just stop
she wasn't
it.
Quite you hush.
Just stop
you
it
hush.
With your Trek crap.
But I felt like I've already been through that, so I kinda know how it works. And so like them trying to use her as that really quirky robot character. It was just kind of like, it was cute. It worked. I mean it was fine, but I didn't Yeah, it wasn't like the best part of the movie to me.
But I did like how they put it to use on Kessel when she started the droid uprising, so that, to help them escape. Because I love the shots of like you see those really simplistic like box droids just stamping on the control boards.
I laughed so hard.
That
was great. I laughed. I the second time around that was even funnier to me for some reason. So I was laughing in the theater. But I'll tell you another thing I was finally relieved with and very happy about, but everyone knows that I'm like the old canon stickler. Like, I love me some old canon. And the fact that I was like, please tell me they're going to mention the Maw cluster or the Maw or something near Kessel. And sure enough, like, first it was like it looked like they were not going that direction at all. And I'm like, man, because there's no mention of an Imperial base near Kessel or anything like that. So I'm like, what's going on? And then all of a sudden you have the Imperials kind of I come out of nowhere during the Kessel run. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. And then the fact that they mentioned the Maw, like they finally show it. I'm like, oh, and I was, because at first I'm like, don't tell me that their version of the Maw is just this big, like there's monsters, these space monsters everywhere. And the fact that it was like, no, it was kind of a weird anomaly. Like that doesn't normally happen. I was okay with, I was like, all right, I forgive it. But the fact that they even had the Maw, I was like, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Okay.
Like, I was like, this movie is totally in line with, like, the like the cartoon TV shows and stuff where they actually will make references to old canon and bring it into official canon. So I was totally happy with that.
Okay, so here's a question for you EUers. I know both you guys are like hardcore EU, and I don't know who's best to answer this question. So I'm just going to put it out there and y'all fight for it. But so how close, I remember you, Austin, talking about how the Maul played its part in the EU and with Han Solo. How close did that line up with what we saw in the film?
Well, with the Maul in the old expanded universe, you didn't really get much of that until later on, like in the Jedi Academy trilogy. But they do make mention that Han used like that's how he won he was able to beat the Kessel Run in so short a time, was because he used the Maul.
Gotcha.
Like kind of went through the outskirts of it. I think that was kind of like the normal line of the Kessel Run anyways. So it could be that's kind of what they established that as part of, you know, in order to beat Han Solo's time, the Kessel Run runs better through this part of the course, and it will come close to the Maw or something like that, you know. So it does kind of fall close in line. So it really was a good feel, you know, like it was a good reference because it pretty much stayed true to the original canon.
I got you.
Even the distance I felt like was close enough because, you know, you have it's in the same system, but you know, it's far enough away, well, you know, but it's still great.
Yeah. Okay. I got you. I was questioning that in my mind just when I was watching. I was like, how close is this playing out to like old?
Yeah,
old
no, it was pretty fair. Like it feels like it fits, like it could fit in old canon, but I'm glad that now it's official canon. But, I like the other references, like we were talking about, where they mention Aura Singh and Bosk, and then they mention talking about Darth Maul when Darth Maul's cameo when he talks about come to me on Dathomir. I was like, yay, that's cool. We got Dathomir in the movies. Mm-hmm. So this movie was it was laying down like canon left and right.
Let me tell you about two little things that I saw. One thing that I've seen online, the other I haven't seen mentioned yet. I want to say Wicket, but his name is Warwick Davis. I was supposed to say, yeah. You know that guy, yeah. Wicket. So he plays a character
Willow.
Called...
I said Willow. When he popped up, I looked at Candy. I was like, Willow!
well, he plays a character called Weasel in the film. And did you know it's the same character that was in The Phantom Menace?
Yep.
Oh, that's cool. I did hear about that, but I didn't know if that was official or not. But I like that theory.
Yeah.
Because it works.
Here's another one that I haven't seen mentioned online in any of the Easter egg stuff that I've been looking through. But I just noticed this. So part of Infest Nest's little gang there, we see a guy from Rogue One. And it's Idrios Tutubes. Yep.
Yeah, when I first saw him, I actually thought it was like someone who's Plo Koon species.
Yeah.
And then there's like the second time we see him, then I saw that it was him.
But oh, yeah.
I like that.
And so
it would have been cool if Infest Nest was Barriss Offee or something.
That would
Did
be.
She survive the purge?
That's what I was thinking. I was like, is that supposed to be somebody like Barriss or somebody? I don't know who she is.
I don't know. But it's cool when you start looking at it, how this thing takes place, 10 years prior to A New Hope. So
right.
So we have a good 10 years for two more Han Solo movies because they've already signed Alden Ehrenreich to two more movies. He signed a three-movie deal. So you know there's two more
we'll
coming.
We'll see.
Yeah. depending on the box office, but... There's two more, whether he's in another Han Solo movie or he is in a Lando movie or a Boba Fett movie or whatever. But it's cool to see that was this like the actual start of the rebellion right here?
And it looks like that was supposed to be an implication. Yeah.
Yeah. And Han played like the biggest part in starting the rebellion that he didn't want to even join.
And he didn't even realize
right,
he did
could,
it.
That very well could be because I was thinking the same thing. But I almost wondered if anything, it would be like the start of the rebellion where, because maybe Infest Nest has some sort of connection to
Saw Gerrera.
Oh, Lord, now I'm Saw Gerrera. Yeah. And so that, because, you know, they're kind of their own band of rebels fighting the Empire. And then, you know, and then they get the actual rebellion involved, but the rebellion wants to kind of separate themselves from that group.
Yeah.
But that's what I was thinking. I was like, either it's that or it's its own rebellion just against their upper, like, you know, because the Empire is so high above the smugglers. So it's more like you have the smugglers and you have the gangsters. So it's more like that kind of a war, you know, all the common folk versus the gangsters and the pirates and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I will say with this, one thing that it's kind of dawned on me that I was thinking about was, you know, being that this is 10 years before, you know, A New Hope and everything, and we see Maul. That kind of brought up two kind of interesting things to me, is that when we see him at this point, he's the head of he's the secret head of a criminal organization.
Right.
Plus, you know, by the time we see him again in Rebels, he doesn't seem like he's the head of anything anymore. So that makes me wonder, you know, what happened in that, you know, 8 years time.
Right.
And also, what would he, you know, it makes me also wonder why he wanted what's it called? Coraxium?
Yeah, Coraxium, yeah.
Yeah, it makes me wonder why he wants it so bad, if that's something they'll ever follow up on, like in the expanded universe or a sequel.
Right. See, that was the thing I was thinking about. Okay. I'm like, with that thing they bring up, you know, with him, him becoming like the head of this crime organization, the Crimson Sun and all that. It almost, one thing they could do with this kind of movie is that maybe it's setting up another movie, but not necessarily a solo movie. Kind of like how they do in the Marvel universe. One thing may set up for another movie somewhere else in the universe. So it'd be cool. That's one thing I would mind them kind of playing around with in the Star Wars universe, is doing these standalone films that, you know, they may throw in and out, you know, different characters, people that we know and love, and then people that you just don't, you know, that, you know, it's kind of like they're new characters or whatever. Like, I could see this whole story of, like, Maul trying to start something with this coaxium that he's collected, you know, and that would be in, like, the solo, the standalone Boba Fett movie or, you know, something like that. Maybe it ties in. Maybe it even ties into the Obi-Wan Kenobi movie. Maybe somehow it'll tie into, like, going back to Obi-Wan in some way. Maybe it's a way for us to at least see how Maul finds out that Obi-Wan is on Tatooine or something like
no,
that.
No, because he finds that out in Rebels.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. But this leads into that. Or I guess because Rebels did cover all that. So I guess we wouldn't be able to tie it into that.
If I had a guess, I'm thinking he needs that coaxium. But because what does it do? Does it like power hyper? I mean, it's just like hyperspace fuel.
I
kind
assumed
of thing?
It powered big vehicle, like it powers Star Destroyers and stuff like that.
So I am assuming since he's binding all these underworld parties together, he's trying to build an army to take on the Empire.
Yeah,
because he hates the Emperor, right?
Yeah, and I mean that was his end goal in Rebels. He wanted to destroy, you know, the Emperor. He also had his vendetta with Obi-Wan, but he wanted to destroy Palpatine for what he did to him.
Yeah, so that's
right.
That's
then, you know, and plus, you know, they mentioned it at the beginning of the movie. It was all like people fight over hyperfuel, and that's what coaxium is. So it's the hyperfuel.
Yeah, and that's what I assumed when I saw.
And they mentioned that. I remember now. They mentioned that they can power entire fleets of ships with this stuff.
Yeah. So you know, it could be that he's putting together, you know, secretly, this huge armada. And he's getting ready to, you know, take on the Emperor and the Empire. But and maybe that's how, you know, here's my thinking. Maybe that's how he ends up being the Darth Maul that he is in Rebels. Broken, beaten. And, you know, the last thing he needs to do is just find and kill Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
Right.
Unless it'd be Obi-Wan. Funny is like, what would be funny is he gets all the coraxium, and what actually happened is he has his whole armada, and he's getting them ready to all jump to hyperspace, and when they all jump, all their ships explode because they didn't do something right with how they did the coraxium, and he's left completely alone, and he's back to where he started, and that's how we find him in Rebels. There we go. I just wrote it all.
Boom.
We just wrote the whole thing. Let's mail this into Lucasfilm.
Fixed it. You're welcome. That's what it says on the box. You're welcome.
The big poster is just like the big explosion, and you see Maul, and it just says, oops.
That's it. You know, one thing I did really, really like about this film, aside from just the film itself, was the music. I think.
Oh yeah, the score, dude. Especially when you see Infus Nest.
Oh yeah,
like that score, because it sounded like a child choir, but like it made it sinister. So it was sort of a hint that hey, this is a young girl that's the leader of this group. So they play like childlike music. Did you catch that at all?
Go ahead, Ray.
It kind of sounded like that, but it also made me think like. It kind of reminded me of that music that you see like sometimes in Westerns when a showdown's about to happen. Yeah. Kind of reminded me of that. Kind of had that tone.
Yeah. And so, I bought the soundtrack the other day. And you can definitely tell John Williams created the Han Solo theme, the main music for it. Because it's very John Williams-y. But John Powell did a good job intertwining that theme with his style of music. So it plays really, really well together, especially in the mall scene where they're, you know, trying to get away and go through the Kessel Run and all the throwbacks to Empire and the music. Oh God, it was so cool. It brings that Empire feeling back to it. And I was just totally blown away by this soundtrack. I mean, it blows Michael Giacchino's Rogue One score out of the water. Just totally like stomps it, steps on it, and kicks it away.
What did y'all think? Speaking of music, what did y'all think of the little Easter egg that the recruitment area, in Corellia for the Empire, when they were doing their little video playing, the actual Imperial March is the actual like music for the Empire.
I didn't pay attention.
It's like the actual Imperial. You can hear the Imperial March playing on the video, like on the little video screens in the background.
And wasn't it making that. It like, but it was making it sound like real happy versions. Like
it was kind of like it's kind of. Like, I think maybe it might have been like the tone might have been a little bit lighter, but it was like that exact, dun dun, not that one, but the typical Imperial March.
Yeah, the dun 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 dun. Dun
yeah, that dun, one. Dun, yeah, dun,
yeah,
yeah.
I didn't hear that. And wasn't that Tarkin talking? Or was I crazy? The guy who does Tarkin's voice now for maybe Rebels or something.
It might have been.
I mean,
could've been. I have to go back now.
It just had a Tarkin sound to it in the advertisement.
Yeah. But it was good to see, like, in that movie, that was one time you actually see, like, how the Empire has its fingers in the, in the galaxy now. Instead of just seeing them typically as the bad guy, now you see how typical civilians see them. We usually only see that like in the, Rebels and the other TV shows. In the movies, it's just, they're usually just outright bad guys. But, I like that, you kind of see that little hidden side of them where they're, they just seem like an army recruitment center.
It's getting to be about that time, but before we go, let's talk about like one thing that we wish we got from Solo that we didn't get. Okay, before we wrap it up, and I'll go first. The one thing I wish that we got that we didn't get was how in the heck did Chewbacca end up on Mimban in that freaking jail? I mean that cell thing that he was in. I mean, how did he get there? It makes me want to see a Chewbacca backstory movie now, just to see how he goes from Revenge of the Sith, taking Yoda to fly off into Dagobah, and then he ends up in this jail, this mud planet place. I really wish we knew why he got there.
Right. I mean, I thought the one thing I would have loved to have seen more of is more like Han and Chewie in the Falcon. Maybe even, kind of see him maybe like after Han wins the Falcon, see him already kind of like doing his own thing with the ship before taking off or something like that. Like he's already starting to throw on new guns or something like that. I don't know. Beyond that, I mean, it was, They had a lot of fan service. I'm trying to think of anything else. I mean, that was pretty much it. I wanted more Falcon. Maybe even more like Han Chewie stuff. Maybe it would have been great to have more of a like more Wookiee presence, instead of having that pivotal scene where Chewie goes back to help his Wookiee, you know, his Wookiee family, his Wookiee friends. And it would have been cool to even see more of that. Maybe even more if the story even focused more on having more Wookiee slaves doing some of the stuff there or something like that. You know, just seeing that, that would have been probably pretty cool. But, you know, and if you notice, they never really even mentioned like Chewie owing him a life debt or anything like that. I'm surprised that exactly. We didn't have any kind of mention about that. You know, like it's kind of unspoken. It's like Chewie is dedicated to Han now, but at the same time, you wouldn't have known it because, I mean, Chewie does kind of, at one point, he was going to go off on his own because he wanted to help the Wookiees.
Is he dedicated?
That is a canon tie-in. That is probably, to me, I feel like that was a nod to, like, the canon because, you know, later on we know Chewie goes back and dedicates the, you know, his full attention, his, you know, his full time to liberating the Wookiees from Kashyyyk.
So that is official Lucasfilm canon that he has a life debt to Solo.
As far as I know, yeah.
Where?
Because I think they mentioned it in the books or in the comics.
I just don't remember seeing that anywhere in the new canon.
Right. I mean, as far as I know, he does.
Hmm.
Oh, and they also didn't use, in the movie, they didn't use the fact that Han was, because they always said that Han, somehow he used those golden dice to win the Falcon, and that wasn't the case in the movie.
Unless he just had him in his pocket.
A good luck charm from Kira.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Ray, what's one thing you wanted to see that you didn't get to see?
I already said it earlier. I would have loved to have seen Tag and Bink. That's just me. I've loved that comic series. So I would have loved to have seen them at, you know, I don't know what happened. I don't know if they got cut for time or if they got digitized somehow, but I would have liked to have actually seen them like in action do some like tiny little interaction with the canon for like maybe a precursor for a new comic series coming up.
Yeah, that would have been good. That would have been cool, especially since they made such a big deal about it on Twitter or wherever.
Yeah.
I guess that's going to do it for this week. Yep. So if you want to play with us or talk to us between episodes, you can find us on our official website at outofrimnews.com. You can check us out on our various social media sites, Twitter, which is at Outer Rim News, and Facebook is facebook.com/Outer Rim News, and you can also find us on Instagram at Outer Rim News.
Oh, and also remember that the podcast is not endorsed or supported by Disney or Lucasfilm. It's all for entertainment, so all the names and sounds that we use are copyright and registered trademarks of Disney and their respective copyright holders.
All righty. Well, I don't know about you guys, but I think we still got more to talk about with Solo. So I think like a part two to this would be a good idea. What you think?
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe we can try to
squeeze it out.
If anything, we can have like a little mini episode or something where we kind of have a follow-up or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. We can do that. We can definitely do that. We can do that. So it's good to be back. Good to be back in the co-pilot's chair. Yeah. Yeah. I'm 190 years old, so. So
that's great. True. I didn't even realize. I was like, you look great for your age.
Yeah. Oh, so. Thanks. Golly. Yeah. All righty. Well, good to have you here, Ray.
Thank
love you,
for
man.
Having me.
Love you, man.
Love y'all too.
You have done. Hey, I just want to say you've done like this a super job with the podcast, man. Somebody should pay you, really.
Well, thank
Austin.
You. Austin. Yeah. There we go.
Oh God! I just want to say it's good to be back because I was in the dark times for a little while there with work and everything, stress. It was just like taking me out a little bit. But it's good to be back talking about Star Wars. We got a new Star Wars movie coming out, so that just appeared. So it's a great, great time to be a Star Wars fan. Just go see it. We need some more money in that box office. Go see it. Go see it. Any last thoughts?
Don't do that. Don't let people think that there's franchise fatigue. Like, jump up there. It's a good movie. Don't listen to the press. Watch it, and you'll have a good time.
Yeah. It's definitely a great movie. You'll have a fun time. You know, even if you're, like, tired of, like, the Jedi stuff, there's, you know, like we've been saying, this is just a fun, like, space western. It's a really good time. Yeah, definitely go see it.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
Come on.
Come on.
Yeah, come on.
Come on.
Come on.
Alrighty. May the force
do it.
Be with
You'll
you.
Take a date. You'll get lucky, I promise. Peace.
Ray, you got to say something to go out.
Oh, crud.
That's it. We'll leave it there. Jesus.